rose again from the dead. This table here, it's a very simple table. It's just a reminder of God's extravagant love towards us, his unbelievable, far-reaching love. And I'd like you all to come on a journey with me this evening. For some of you, it's not going to be very difficult. You may not know that. But for some of you, the journey's not hard because you're already in the place that I'm going to describe. I want you to imagine, for those of you that are Christians, I want you to imagine the time that you weren't. If we knock the slides off for now, thanks. We'll pop them up in a minute. Thank you. I want you to imagine before you were saved. So there's a lot of people here. You remember the time you became a Christian, whether it was a year ago, 47 years ago. And I want you to put yourself in the shoes of the prodigal son. Get your Bibles out, please. We're looking at Luke 15. We probably can't do this because I've messed it up with the PowerPoints, but I'm going to read the one or two verses that go with each of the slides. If we can do that, great. If we can't, it doesn't matter, but we'll have a go. Brilliant. Thanks, Dave. And I want us, as we come to this table, I want us to see what we were like in God's eyes. If there's a chapter in the Bible that shows the extent of God's love, that shows the extent of his patience, of his overwhelming kindness, of his generosity, it's Luke 15. Loads of you will know it. It starts, doesn't it, with the lost sheep. Then you get the lost coin, and then we get this lost son story. We call it the prodigal son. And it's very much along the lines of the song we sang earlier, you know, where there was no way, you made a way. And we'll never enjoy, really. We'll just come and we'll just, as Christians, we'll just, oh yeah, here we go, here's that fruit juice again, here's that bit of bread. We'll never really take it as we should in overwhelming thanks unless we keep reminding ourselves that we were just like the prodigal. Now, if you're not a Christian, this is actually describing you tonight, and you might be a little horrified. Jesus told this story, and need to remember, he was speaking in a Middle Eastern culture. Huge thing of Middle Eastern culture is shame and honor. The family name is everything. You did not diss your family. You didn't do anything that made your family come out in a bad light. If you did, well, you were almost cast out and thought of as dead. Jesus is sharing this story about his father's heart, that he is relentless, relentless in his pursuit of looking for lost things. Yet look how he describes them. Jesus continued. There was a man, that's verse, sorry, what is that, 11, I think. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." So he divided his property between them. And from that first verse, we see the first slide there, and the picture of him that tells us, here's a guy on the farm, he's fed up. He's had enough, basically. He's had enough of living with dad on the farm. He's bored. It's one of young people's favorite words. I'm bored. I heard a few of the kids this afternoon at the family lunch come up to their parents and go, "I'm bored." Some of them were a little bit polite. They were going, "I'm bored." Some of them, no airs and graces. "I'm bored. Give me something to do. Get me out of here." This young man was bored. And yet here he has everything. Everything he could ever need. He's on his father's farm. He knows his father's love, his father's care, his father's compassion. This, Jesus is sharing, this is what it's like before we're Christians, is the way we respond and the way we behave to God. Think of the air that we're just breathing now. Because God's patient, because he's loving, because he's merciful, we all haven't dropped dead. Think of the food you've enjoyed today. Think of the roof over your heads last night. Think of the friends. Think of the jobs you've got. Think of goodness knows how many things. And yet when we don't want God, we're saying, God, you know, really? I don't need you. But far, far worse than that, when he was saying, hey, Dad, give me my share now. What was he saying? He was saying, Dad, listen, I can't really wait. I can't really hang around for you to die. I need my inheritance now. I don't know if you've tried that, you know, with your parents, maybe with, you know, property tax and inheritance and so on. And maybe it's your idea to go to them and say, hey, look, listen, well, why don't you just move out of your house if you're retired and just go and live in some shed somewhere and just divide it all up between us now? Or maybe you could just, I don't know, maybe you could just drive your car off a cliff tomorrow and kill yourself. And then I'd get it all. This is what he was saying. This is how we live when we don't have God ruling over us. God, you may as well be dead to me. Let's have a look at the next slide. The next slide tells us not only was he fed up, he packed up. And so we get the next verse. The next verse is what? Verse 13. We magically get verse 13 up on the screen. Yeah, I know it's a Bible, but I can't read it. I can read it from my phone. That's fine. Yeah, thank you for the offer of the Bible. But this is a bit bigger than Rich's font. Oh, it's there. Great. Fantastic. So not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country. Got everything he had. He thought he knew what was best. Before you became a Christian, before you surrendered and bowed the knee to Jesus, you thought you knew best. Interesting phrase there is distant country. To get as far away from Dad as possible. You know, tonight, if you're not a Christian, that's in effect how you're living. You want to get away from God as far as you can. You don't want any of his influence over you. You don't want it. You don't need it. Let's have a look at the next slide, and we'll get back to the same verse, if that's possible. So, yeah, of course, he's living it up. He's having a great time. What does verse 13 go on to say? Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off in a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. Wild living. He was having a great time. And you know what? There are hundreds, thousands. In fact, there are millions of people out there, even millions in London. Tonight, some of them are so far from God. And we say, oh, isn't it terrible? They must be so depressed. No, some of them are having a blast. Some of them have never been as happy in their life. Some of them even, maybe they were brought up in Christian homes, and they've just thrown it all off. They've gone off to uni, or they've moved out of house, and they used to go to church, and they used to be in youth group, and it was so boring. Now, they're living with their own flatmates, they've got everything they want, and they're out there tonight, and it's a beautiful evening. Maybe they're down in Greenwich, maybe they're by the river, and they've got a pint in their hand, and they're thinking, wow. Maybe they're having a laugh even with some of their old church friends, and they're thinking, do you remember years ago when we were 14, 15 and we still had to go to church? We'd be stuck in some stuffy old building with a bunch of old people. Tonight, look at this beautiful evening. Look at this amazing pint. And the night's young yet. We haven't even gone to a club yet. And they're having a great time. But please don't think living far from God is all about being really miserable and empty. And it is for a lot of people. But for others, they're having a great time. Maybe some of you young people, you get to school, you know, in the morning and you chat with your mates and they've got all these amazing stories. They tell you this incredible house party they had and the parents were away for the night. And they say, well, what did you do? What did you do last night? Oh, wow. Well, I was listening to this guy in church telling me, seriously, wow. Let's have a look at the next slide. The rave up. It's harder. What does it go on to say? Maybe it's too difficult to flick between them. Verse 14, After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine for the country. He'd reached rock bottom. So yes, there's a whole load of people and they're having a great time out there, but it won't be the whole of their lives. It may not even be for that long. There are so many people out there, they've had a great time, or they think they're having a great time, or they're telling everyone on social media they're having a great time, but inside they know they've messed up. They know they're hard up. They know that really their plans are going to move away, they were going to travel the world, they were going to meet a group of friends, they were going to do this, they were going to do that. And really it's just not happening. Or maybe for some people that they have, that they've met the girl of their dreams and they even end up getting married and it all goes pear-shaped, or it just doesn't seem to satisfy them. Or they get that promotion at work, or they get that much better job, much better house. Yet inside, hard up, they're bankrupt. This is what we were like before we became Christians. Let's have a look at the next slide. Things get worse for him. Not only is he hard up, but he ends up having to join up. After he'd spent everything he had, verse 15, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired him out to a citizen of that country, sent him to his field to feed. Jesus is telling this story to Jews. Oh, they're going, oh, pigs. Those lovely, cute, cuddly pigs. Uncleanest of all. What job with pigs? You're living life without God. May as well be next time. That's what Jesus was saying to the people who were living. That's what the message of the Bible is. If you think you don't need God, if you think you know best, and if you've got great plans, well, do you know what? Where they're going to end up? They're going to end up in a pigsty. If you think you know best. And how he messed up. Look at verse 16. Messed up's the next one. Driving Dave mad, sorry, with all the different toings and froings. So he went out, hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. He'd messed up so badly, he really reached rock bottom. The Bible tells us that. Out of the depths have I cried unto you. We were hearing this morning over at the manor about the broad and the narrow road. And yet, this is what happens to those people who decide, I want the broad road. Without God, my way, motorway, Rich called it. He told us a few details about My Way, the classic Frank Sinatra song. The most popular song to be chosen at funerals. I am still staggered. When I go and do a funeral for an unbeliever, generally that's played at some point. And when you look at the lyrics, seriously, your way? My Way? How long was it in the charts in the UK? Someone have a guess? How many weeks? Oh, we're going 52 weeks, a whole year. Daryl's brave enough to answer. Anyone else? 100 weeks! Oh, come on, Rita. That's ridiculous. Do you know what, Rita? Have you been reading my notes? It was about 120 weeks. 2.5 years. It was a favorite of Slobodan Milosevic. You know that really lovely guy? When he was there in jail, waiting to be tried for his war crimes. And increasingly, he played it, and he would turn the volume up louder and louder. It is so popular in Asia that it is constantly played in karaoke. It's so popular But when it's sung badly, people get furious. In Manila a number of years ago, in one karaoke, one guy sang it so badly out of tune, someone else shot him dead. On one of Frank Sinatra's many comeback gigs in 1984 at the Albert Hall, as he started to play this most popular request, the band all around him and those on the front row heard him mutter, "I can't stand this song." Didn't have it played at his funeral. Interestingly, instead, he had played "The Best Is Yet to Come." Wow. Let's have a look at the next one. Not only messed up, this is where we start to get a glimmer. He goes from messing up to waking up. Verse 17. When came to his senses. How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am, starving to death. I'll set out and go back to my father and say to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants." So he realizes, and can you remember, some of you? Do you remember when you became a Christian? Wow, yeah. There is no one, there is nothing like Jesus who satisfies. Maybe some of you lived your lives and you tried a whole load of stuff. Just didn't work. Maybe right now you're trying to sort things out. Or you thought last year, yeah, when I got through that problem, or when I overcame that difficulty, or when I was, and yet still. Because you haven't yet woken up to your incredible need, Jesus. Let's have a look at the next one about woke up. After he wakes up, he sort of looks up, and then let's have a look at the next one. This is the crucial one. If you want to take the bread and the wine in a moment, you need to have done this. This is what happens when you become a Christian. You own up. You go to God and you say, "Okay, wow, I'm blown away that I'm more loved than I could ever dream. But I know quite well that I'm even more wicked than I could even imagine." Can you say that tonight? If you can say tonight in your heart of hearts, and it's a horrible thing to admit and to say, but if you can say that you're even worse, you're even more wicked than you can even imagine, and own up to that and confess your sin to God, that means you understand how much you've messed up. That means you understand how precious is the blood of Jesus. What it meant for him to die for you. Let's just finish off quickly with the next slides. Of course, he goes and he owns up to his father. And yet, wonderfully, what's the response? Let's have a look at the next one. His dad sees him from a long way off. I love that phrase. Sees him from a long way off. And his dad starts running towards him. Remember, Middle Eastern shame and honor culture. He should have had his hired servants go out to get him, to hide him because he was a disgrace, or to beat him. And his dad runs to him and embraces him. More than that, let's have a look at the next slide. Dresses him up. Gives him a robe. He gives him a ring. He gives him a roast. Not a roasting. He gives him a roast. A big dinner. Let's kill the fattened calf. What does he say? I think it's at the end of verse 24. Let's celebrate. Jake was back on the piano. I'd get him to play that song. Celebrate. This is not only good times, great times, this is the best of times. This table is where we really celebrate. Where we say, "Come on, everybody, and join in." Because if you know the fact that Jesus Christ died for you, wow. And then I think the beginning of verse 25, we're not going to go into it, but you just get the name. It says it all, doesn't it? The name of the older brother. Meanwhile. Something called meanwhile. But the party's going on. The party's going on. Why? Because we thought he was dead. We thought he was lost. He's now been found. When you put your trust in Jesus, when you owned up, saw the seriousness of your sin, there was this celebration in heaven. And as those of us who are reading Explore Notes this week, the end of the section on the lost sheep and the lost coin, it's heaven. It's the angels. The angels are watching this party. I'm sure they joined in, but they're watching who party, who celebrate? They're watching Father God celebrate. So as the musicians come back, we're going to enjoy this table. And it's going to be a time of celebration. But please, if you're not a Christian, if you don't acknowledge that you're more wicked than you could even imagine, and that's just too much for you to say and admit. And if you've never gone to God and you've never asked him for forgiveness of sin, then that's okay, but this is not for you. But it's for you to reflect and to think about it. But if you've done that, and you can even do that now for the very first time, it may be dawning on you, wow, that's how bad I am. That's why Jesus told that story, to illustrate me. You also need to believe the other truth then, that you're not only more wicked than you could ever imagine, that you are more loved. Because where there was no other way, Jesus Christ forced dying on the cross. Let me just give thanks for the bread, and then Chris will lead us in a song. Are we going to stay seated, or are we? Yeah, we'll stay seated as we sing this. We'll serve out the bread. Let's all hold it, and we'll eat.